Hey guys, it's Eric Arpegino, and I got another review for you. And this time it is Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, which is obviously the second part in the Final Fantasy VII Remake trilogy, because it's a Plan 3 three series game, or three-part series game. But, much as Remake was not so much... I mean, it is a remake of Final Fantasy VII, but... The game actually makes you think about what the term remake for being in the title actually has to do with the actual plot of the game. They didn't just remake the game. They remade the narrative. And Rebirth is much the same deal. But while it doesn't change the core plot too much, it's more like it remakes the context of how those events take place. That's the best way I could describe the plot without spoiling anything. And while you may not like some of those decisions, I felt that they were interesting, but I think the bigger thing to take away from those changes that you may not like if you play this game and you end up not liking some parts is maybe there'll be a bigger payoff later, and there probably will be. But if you haven't played Crisis Core, you might be confused as to Zack's involvement or other characters like Cisne showing up. So that game is kind of required playing, but if you don't like feel like playing the actual game, there's probably Let's Plays you can watch on the internet and maybe just cutscenes only just to get the general gist of the game and a feel for what Zack's character's like. Because the original Final Fantasy VII release doesn't have much footage on him beyond you learning that he exists in the game and then having to go into Disc 3 and going back to Nibelheim to learn some cutscenes that lead up to what happened to him and how exactly Cloud got to Midgar in the first place. But, as far as gameplay is concerned, they've taken the gameplay from Remake but put it in an open world setting, which has its up and downs. It does a lot of the open world busy work stuff that you normally expect in open world games, including the towers that open up more areas of the map for you to visibly see so you can just go to because icons will show up and basically point you in the right direction. But, the way combat actually works has changed considerably because while you're still generally pressing square to attack or triangle to do their special ability, there are now shortcuts to doing your weapon skills. So combat flows a lot better. You don't have to just rely on the ATB bar. And furthermore, like that extends beyond weapon skills. You could also link spells to those shortcuts as well. The only thing I would probably improve over that is giving you the ability to set up multiple sets of, like, materia setups and stuff, and being able to switch that on the fly in battle just to make your characters a bit more versatile. And even if you couldn't equip multiple materia sets, I like having the ability to switch between multiple different move sets. That's something that maybe they can consider putting into the game in a later update, but it's almost assuredly something they're going to be doing for the third part of the game. But, the way each character controls, despite, like, having the same general control setup, the way they feel at when you play them is different because the mechanics are still the difference, even though the inputs are the same. But, so Yuffie's, if you haven't played the Yuffie DLC from the Intergrade release from PS5, and the Steam release, they really did a good job making it feel like a ninja, because she could throw her shuriken and then cast ninjutsu magic on them and basically just spam weaker versions of elemental skills, which do a lot of DPS if you are really good at buffing your magic stat and doing other things to augment the strength of those elemental skills. And then she's got nice area of effect skills for, like, that, like the Windstorm one in particular just is It basically activates around her and just destroys everything that's within a pretty large radius, actually. But she's at the center of where the attack activates, so learning to be able to throw shuriken and then hit retrieve to get back in the middle of the action, and knowing when to do long range and short range just feels really good. But and then there's Red, who is basically a close range fighter, and they actually changed one of his limit breaks to an actual gameplay mechanic called Vengeance Mode, where if you do perfect guards, because that's also a feature that's new in this game. If you do a guard at the right time, you'll just negate any kind of damage. But even if Red does take damage, his vengeance meter will build up, and then he can activate that and use Siphon Fang, which is basically the one Blood Fang ability. It's like his level two, number one, first level two limit break from the original game. But you could just do that until the meter drops. And my favorite skill of his is like the Stardust Ray, which has been redesigned to work more like the beta anime skill. I don't know what it's called in the original Japanese release, because the localization kind of butchered a lot of stuff, and I think beta was one of those skills. It's probably called something else, but it's a fire-based attack. While it has no fire-based properties in this, the animation looks almost similar, and enemies do get hit multiple times, and it covers a pretty large radius and does a lot of damage, much like that spell. But he also spins around when you hold down the square button to do a heavier version of attack. And he's kind of fun to play with. Barret is definitely retooled a bit more to play more like a tank character. Because he can use this lifesaver skill to just make enemies target him, and it also boosts up his HP so that he can take additional damage, thus fulfilling the tank role a lot better than ever. And performance-wise, the game is actually pretty good at maintaining a high frame rate. It's not always at 60 FPS. And there are a couple instances where it drops, but I think those could be fixed in a patch in the future. Because, like, it was kind of unforgivable. Like, the rest of the game's so smooth. Why are these small portions of the game having pockets of drops for, like, a sustained number of seconds? That just. It's not game breaking, but it is noticeable. And it's mainly within the automated roller coaster areas. And when you get to that point in the game, you'll know what I'm talking about. But the music's really good too, because it has a more organic feel to it, because you'll be on the overworld listening to the overworld theme, and then you'll get into a battle, and then it'll immediately shift into an elite motif version of that overworld track. And each region of the overworld has like its own variation on the main overworld that you hear in the original Final Fantasy. I think it's only the in-story missions that have completely unique battle tracks that aren't like that. It's only the open world section, but that's still really interesting that they can do smooth transitions like that. I mean, it is a developer trick. All they're really doing is playing both tracks at the same time and opting to mute one, and then when the battle starts, it will just unmute the other track, and that's why it seems seamless, because it's basically playing simultaneously. I mean, I basically spoiled for you, but a lot of people might think it's magic, but no. Don't trick yourself into magical thinking. There's always some kind of technical know-how going on behind that. And it's probably part of the reason the game is so large, because the game will take you about 150 gigs, not including update sizes for doing updates. So make sure you have the appropriate space for this game. And it is 2 disc long, but it's really only 1 disc where you play the game stream data that hasn't been installed from the install disc. And then there's the install disc, but that's the actual file size of the game in total. But if you're a fan of Remake, obviously you'll probably enjoy this game. And if you hadn't played it, well, go play that one first and then come back here because you're in for a treat. And while there was a promotion for the game, that was $70 for the two of those games on the PSN. I'm sure you could find Remake Now used for a good price, and then you, and if you're a cheap gamer, you could always just wait for a sale, because this game will probably go on sale probably around Black Friday. So if money's an issue for you, I suggest waiting. And hell, you might even want to wait long enough to just play all three in one go, but I would recommend against that, considering how long this game is, because it's going to take, if you're a trophy hunter like me, I mean, I'm not always going for the 100% trophies, but it is something I like to do. It's going to take you about 200 hours, if or maybe less, depending how good you are, because a lot of those trophies are very difficult to get, because a lot of them involve mini-games and beating those mini-games at the top-ranked scores to get the best rewards, and then you have to play through the game in hard mode, because that's also back. Although, thankfully, you can restore MP if you use a cushion item, because that's the only item that the hard mode will allow you to use, but you can only use those at specific benches within the overworld. You don't have such luck when you're doing the in-game story missions, because they don't have broken benches where you can use cushions on. They just have the normal ones. But there are ways to make hard mode easier in that respect too, like being able to restore MP when you kill an enemy or whatever. So there's that to consider as well. But I'm going to give this game a score of 9.5 out of 10. Not quite perfect. There are a couple areas in the game where it's kind of, where they could have improved it a little bit more, but it's almost perfectly flawless game, and it's close to being my game of the year for the year so far. But one thing I will mention is a lot of people had a problem, had the assumption that the original game's release was, and they complained about the game going to the Whisper nonsense, but if you actually paid attention to the plot of the in-game lore of a play called Loveless, which is basically an alternate retelling of the original play, a real-world play called God Dameron, which is, I don't know what language that is, but it basically translates to the Twilight of the Gods, which is all based on Norse mythology. How it, the in-game's plot mirrors the overall narrative of that in-game play, as well as the mythology it's actually based on. It's not surprising to see the whispers in there at all. So if you have background knowledge of that story, it's not so weird anymore. And while you could argue that even just doing that makes the plot more contrived, it's not really a problem. But that's all the extra aside I wanted to add to the game. Other than the score, but that's all I have for you guys right now. So I'll see you again next time. Bye-bye.